This is A Story of Sorts, the podcast mostly about bookish stuff. Hello everyone, Karina here. On this episode, I chat with Alice Natal about writing, comic books and comic conventions, and about Dungeons & Dragons. Have a listen. Hello, Alice.
Hi, hello. Hi.
Welcome to A Story of Sorts.
Lovely to be here. Like I said, I've been listening for quite a while, so it's really good to be chatting to you.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do? What are your passions and hobbies? Who is Alice?
Okay, well, I'm a freelance writer. I've been writing kind of semi-professionally for a little while now. I've not been traditionally published, but I write for Book Riot and I self-published a few things. I also do admin as my day job. I've been doing kind of various different admin roles for most of my working life, really. I somehow kind of fell into it. And when I'm not working, I do reading. I like to knit a lot as well. I definitely really enjoy knitting. I play Dungeons and Dragons with my friends, and also I'm often like hanging out with my cats, particularly now my current job, I work from home. So basically I get to spend a lot of time with the kitties, which is great.
Yeah, because I checked your Instagram account and there were lots of photos of your cats.
they're both like, they think they're so smart and so suave, and they are really, really silly, so I'm often taking photos of them getting into kind of ridiculous situations. So
I have a cat as well, so I really love cats.
But yeah, and the rest of the time as well, I'm also involved in some kind of feminist campaign. So I do part of my writing, it's voluntary writing, but it's part of a campaign called Our Streets Now, which is a UK-based campaign against public sexual harassment. So one of the most recent things I've done for them is I write for their literary magazine called Our Books Now, which we launched last month, and it's really exciting to kind of broaden the campaign out into different areas.
That's super interesting. I had no idea. I knew that you were writing, of course, for a few like Book Riot and a few other things, but I had no idea that you also had the feminist project.
It's been really good fun. I've been writing for them for a few months now, and they're such a great team of people. They're doing some really, really good work.
Great. Let's start then with your writing journey. How did it begin?
I can't really remember a time when I didn't write. Like, I wrote loads and loads of stories throughout my childhood. My mum, a little while ago, she brought over a box of stuff from when I was little, and I've been looking through it, and it's like, oh, there's so many kind of stories on like two sheets of paper that I kind of wrote at that time. I started writing seriously when I was about 14, so I planned out this kind of big epic fantasy trilogy in kind of the same vein as like Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials books, which I actually kind of reworked quite a bit up until my early 20s, and then I sent it off to a publisher called Chicken House, who we kind of ended up communicating about it for quite a while. They didn't take it on in the end, but that's how I got to know an editor that I've known since then, a lady called Imogen Cooper, who now runs this editorial services thing called the Golden Egg Academy. So I've actually been working on a different book with her and like the other editors she works with as part of that. So yeah, it's been a long journey. I'm still kind of chipping away at it, but it's something I've just been doing my whole life, and that I can't really imagine not doing it.
That's so fun to hear, like when people really start very young. Did you want to be a writer when you were a child, or did you write more like for yourself or because it was fun?
Oh, definitely always wanted. I think as soon as I realized that books were things written by people, I thought, well, that's definitely what I want to do. I've always wanted to do it. And like I said, it's something that I've been kind of chipping away at through most of like pretty much all of my adulthood and everything. But yeah, it's definitely, it would be my absolute dream top job to be kind of a full-time writer.
And you're a children's and webcomic writer. Which joys each of these things give you in particular?
Sure. I'll give a bit of background about what I work on. Basically the children's writing, like I said, it kind of kicked off with this YA fantasy trilogy that I came up with when I was a teenager. And it's sort of morphed along the way into, I've started writing for kind of middle grade audience rather than YA. I think mostly influenced by my reading. I've been reading a lot more middle grade in recent years than I have YA. So I think my writing has kind of followed what I've been reading in this time. So So at the moment, I'm kind of working on a sort of retelling of Norse mythology, like a book about Norse gods, but as teenagers learning magic and being dramatic and having a lot of teenage angst, which is always fun to write. So that's kind of part of what I've been writing in my kind of children's fiction. Whereas my webcomics, I've been collaborating for ages with my best friend of like 30 years. Like, we met before we even started school. Wow. So her name's Emily Brady, and she's like a really, really talented illustrator. She's kind of a professional artist as well. And she has, so basically we worked on a webcomic together. We started our first webcomic probably about 17 years ago, because I sometimes think, and I have to kind of stop and pause and think, like, is it that long ago that we started this? And yeah, it really was. So we kind of started work on this comic called Footloose, which is about a girl who is like the primary protagonist of her own story. She's kind of been designated a hero, and she's useless at it. She doesn't know how to be a hero at all. So she gets sent to a dojo in Fairyland to learn magical martial art. Well, she learns like a martial art based around throwing shoes at people, which hence the title. I came up with the title and I have not heard of the Kevin Bacon film at all. And I'm slightly, is ever since people are kind of saying like, oh, you mean like the film? It's like, no, I didn't know about that at that time. So it's about like her adventures in this fantasy land, learning how to be a proper hero. And we've kind of then done two other comics along the way about other characters in this universe. So we've got one called Cherry, which is sort of the story of the world's first magical boy. He wants to be a warrior for love and justice, but he makes some terrible decisions and he kind of falls in with a really bad crowd. And then we've got another one which we started, I think maybe a couple of years ago, it's quite recent, called Black Market Magic, which is about like anti-fascist magical girls fighting an oppressive government in the real world, but with lots of magical stuff from the kind of fairyland universe coming in as well.
Wow.
So yeah, like I said, we've been collaborating for a really long time. We've been best friends for most of our lives, and we've just kind of always worked together on, like, I've written things and she's drawn things, and we decided to start a comic. And so basically we kind of come up with a general chapter arc for each comic together. I'll write it, she'll then kind of edit according to how she storyboarded this, and she'll do the drawing and the illustration, like then publishes on the website. So yeah, so we've kind of had this whole back and forth collaboration for quite a long time now.
And where can people find that?
So the website is www.footloosecomic.com. And all our comics are collected there. And like, we also print and sell them. We take them to comic cons and sell them as well. So all free to read online, and people can also kind of buy print editions as well.
Oh, that sounds really cool. And do you find that they are very different processes? And here I'm going to ask about like writing for kids and writing web comics, if there's also anything they have in common, but also the process of working alone or working with someone else.
Definitely, yeah. So it's a very different process writing too. So like I mentioned with the comic, it's so collaborative. It's in a way, because we've known each other for such a long time, I can put down things and kind of know, oops, I'm just going to move this off my head. So yeah, I can write things, and I can sort of know that Emily will know where I'm coming from, or the general sense of what I mean, and yeah, that kind of thing. So for comics, I'm like writing dialogue and sort of brief explanations of the visuals, but I don't put in like loads of details on the visuals, because again, that's what Emily brings to it. She can kind of imagine all the scenarios around it. And so yeah, like I said, she'll make edits to the text to fit in with the visual side of it. With the children's writing, because it's prose and it's solo, it's a very different process. Like, there's definitely not that collaborative element, although I am in a couple of crit groups, so I do kind of send it out to my writing buddies and kind of get their feedback on it, and we'll swap feedback. I recently, with that, I kind of learned the hard way that I need to plan instead of kind of being a pantser. I'm sort of a natural pantser when it comes to my writing. I'll just kind of go off on these wild tangents. And since I've wanted to kind of do it more professionally, I've realized that I need to have a plan, otherwise I never finish anything and I kind of go off, and then I'm like, okay, how am I going to fix this story, because all this stuff is great but it doesn't tie to anything.
Don't really tend to plot, you are more like, okay, I have this vague idea and I start writing immediately.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So and I think it's like the characters as well. I kind of, the characters come through very strongly and then I have an idea of what they would do in a situation. And then I do have to make sure then like with like the YA fantasy book and then the Middle Road book I've been writing, there's been quite a few, most of the time has been spent thinking like, okay, I've got the characters now, but I need to actually make them do something that makes a story rather than just a really
It's always very fun to talk with the writers about this because everybody has their own methods. And I'm always in awe personally of people who are, like you said, prancers, because I usually have a very strong plot. I know exactly where I want to go. And a lot of people are like, no, I just have my characters and there's no point in really planning because they're going to change things somehow. So it's very curious to see how the prancer style kind of works.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like I said, I've learned in recent, I think from now on, I'm definitely going to try and have at least a kind of vague plot, because otherwise, it just takes me so long to get anything written if I don't have a vague idea, which I think is another reason why the collaboration has worked really well, because like I said, Emily and I will meet up, we'll kind of discuss what we want to do with this particular story arc in kind of like generalized terms. And then we will kind of, sorry, I got distracted because there's someone coming up to my window.
It's okay, no worries.
Sometimes like someone will walk past my window. Yeah. So with the collaborating on stories, we sometimes kind of we'll meet up, we will kind of come up with like a sort of plot idea, like a sort of an arc for the chapter, we'll discuss it a bit, and then like I'll write it and then we'll kind of refine it from there onwards. Mm-hmm. Really.
Because then you know what to do with the characters, basically, and that's what you have to worry about, how the dialogue, and so that's exactly, super interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is there something that you enjoy writing the most of all the things you do, like children webcomics, but also maybe reviews, or at least, like for Book Riot, kind of opinion pieces?
Sure. I enjoy like different things depending on what I'm writing, I think. So like with the comics, one of the best things about it is hanging out and working with my best friend and seeing how like what I've written comes to life on a page. Like I'm always, I write something and I'm really excited about it, and then I see kind of the finished projects and I'm like, that's so much better than what was in my head, and so it's really, really good to see. With the children's writing, like I said, I'm working on a story about kind of teenage Norse gods causing havoc. And I get to kind of immerse myself in this world that I've loved Norse mythology since I was little. And I've enjoyed, like, again, I suppose, again, it's a similar sort of thing with the comics. I get to kind of spend time with these characters who I've been thinking about for such a long time, and they kind of really mean a lot to me. And it's just fun kind of playing around with this characters in this magical world, really. And yeah, like you said, I write reviews and articles for Book Riot and other places. And I think, I suppose it's because it's like non-fiction writing, but writing about books is always great fun because I love reading so much. I love kind of finding out about new books and kind of thinking about how they impact on society as well, that sort of thing. So that's always really, really fun to write.
Your story on Norse mythology, because it's funny to see, I would say, to see different people approaching the Norse mythology, because you kind of have the basis stories, but then there's also interpretation. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that project, how you kind of like became so enthralled in Norse mythology and then decided to make your own?
Sure, yeah. I think... in a way, like, obviously, like, I love reading the original myths. I had like a book of Norse mythology when I was little, which was sort of like, I guess, child-friendly retellings of it. And then I've gone on to read kind of it's difficult. Obviously, you can't read the original version of like something that's, initially an oral tradition, and then, versions of it that have been written down. But so it's always like interpretations and translations of it. But I've also read, like, as you said, it lends itself so much to reinterpretation. There have been so many different takes on Norse mythology. I think it was like Joanne Harris, because she's written several books about like the Norse gods, and particularly Loki and other kind of, you know, figures in Norse mythology. I think she described it as like a sandbox to play around in. And I think it's what it lends itself to. There's, you know, I think people can really kind of connect with those figures. And like, that's why there's been so many kind of different takes on them in books. And so I think it was kind of, yeah, that's what developed. I was thinking about kind of my particular take on them. In the book I'm writing, I actually focus in on Sigyn, because in the Norse myths, she's Loki's wife, and she appears occasionally, but not like very often. She's there when Loki's kind of chained in the cave for his punishment, and she's kind of catching the poison that's dripping into his face and to try and like protect him from that. And it kind of, you know, I've not seen too many different interpretations of her. So I started kind of thinking about her as a character and what kind of person she might be. And I ended up coming up with this story about her kind of discovering her own magic and learning to refine it, and, you know, kind of trying to fit into this world alongside all these much more famous kind of powerful figures and stuff. So that's kind of what prompted the story in the first place.
I think that's really cool, because we have seen, I think in the last maybe 2 years, a sort of, or maybe a bit more, sort of retelling, but focusing like of myths, not just Norse mythology, but focusing on the women. And I think it's very telling that I don't know a lot about Norse mythology, but I read the Neil Gaiman's book. And of course I know a little bit through Marvel, and I have no idea of the character. So I know Loki, for example, and I have no idea about that character. So it kind of shows that it's necessary to talk about it and to write about it.
Yeah, I think so. I think, I suppose it's because she doesn't appear very often in the original myths that people who are kind of reading it and reinterpreting it don't pick up on her very much, except as this character who kind of is a bit put upon and a bit kind of like, she ends up kind of being dragged down along with Loki when all the kind of, you know, the downfall of Loki happens in the original stories. So yeah, it was kind of interesting to think about her and kind of think about, you know, if the focus was on her, how would her story unfold?
Yeah. And have you been querying it, or is there any plans for publishing?
Definitely. I'm not quite at the stage of querying it yet. So I'm working on it through this editorial program called the Golden Egg Academy, which is basically, it kind of, you work with industry editors on like refining it and getting a manuscript up to a sort of publishable level, and then they will kind of, you know, start querying it for you. So I'm hopefully, fingers crossed, at the point where it's nearly kind of ready to start going out. But I'm in the middle of a rewrite at the moment. There's still a few odds and ends of the, I guess like the subplots, the various kind of like what the villains are up to, that kind of thing, that I need to sort of refine and kind of really strengthen. So I'm hopefully kind of getting towards the point where I'll be submitting it.
What you read, is it that what inspires you mostly to write fiction? Because you also said that you write a lot of middle grade middle grade stories, because you've been reading so much middle grade stories, or so many middle grade stories, and also now Norse mythology. So what inspires you to write fiction?
It's definitely kind of reflected in what I'm reading. And I suppose it sort of feeds into each other. So I've always loved reading stories about like kids with magic powers, I think is sort of the subgenre that is always my favorite to read. And those are the kind of books I'll seek out as well. When I, you know, in my current reading, and obviously in my past reading as well. So that's something that, I definitely kind of, like, I read the kind of stories I want to write, and I write the kind of stories I want to read, I suppose. But I also read like a lot of nonfiction, and I think in some ways that kind of feeds into things I'm writing as well. Like I kind of was on a bit of a medical history kick for a while. I ended up reading lots of things like The Radium Girls and the Sawbones podcast book and things like that. And so that kind of got me thinking about like, I think that's kind of been an influence in me putting like in Sig, and I have lots of healers and stuff. They kind of turn up and use magic to heal people, but I wanted to try and ground it in medicine without, you know, without getting like super technical, because I'm not mm-hmm. from a medical background at all. But yeah, so I definitely I read like a lot of middle grade. I read a lot of fantasy stories, and I read like nonfiction. I think it all kind of ends up making its way into the things I write.
On your Facebook page, there's an intro, and the intro says, "Come and join the spider circus." Would you like to go into that, into what that means? Of
course. Yeah, no problem. So that is actually it's slightly out of date. So basically, that is a YA fantasy novel that was actually ended up being a prequel to the one I mentioned that I wrote in my teens and early 20s. Mm-hmm. And I self-published it a few years ago. It was sort of set in like this magical circus that travels between different worlds. I had that like on Amazon Kindle for a while to download. I did end up taking it down because I wrote it, I published it, and then kind of a little while, you know, a few years later, I reread it and thought, like, I'm not totally happy with the way I approached it necessarily, the kind of, you know, things I included. So basically, my plan is to kind of rewrite it at some point and then maybe re-release it again after I've had like, so a sensitivity read and some editing on it, because there were definitely things where there's like, you know, me not knowing, and because I don't have personal experience of some of the issues in the story, there were some quite problematic things in there. And in a way, this can kind of link back to the comics as well. That's one mm-hmm. of the really good things about self-publishing, is that if, you know, time goes by and you realize something you've written is like, oh, actually, I wouldn't write it that way now because I know better, or things have moved on, or things have changed, for example. Like sometimes language can move on, or you can just find out more about, say, a certain, like, you know, a certain area of identity or that sort of thing. You have like the chance to do better, and you have the opportunity to very easily kind of correct it or take it down and then kind of improve it and put it back up, that kind of thing. So we had a similar kind of thing actually with the comic. As I mentioned, we've been doing it for 17 years now. And so some of like the language around like gender identity, for example, some of it we didn't know, because we're both like we're both cis women, so we don't have personal experience of like trans issues, for example, like that, you know, what it's like to kind of live in like modern society as a trans person. So a lot of it was like ignorance, and then some of it was like language itself has changed a bit in the past 17 years. So we did a reprint of some of our early comics with like correcting some things to sort of take out the things that are like, you read it now and you think, oh no, that's not what you would say now, and that's, in some cases, that's not what we should have said then.
Yeah, no, that I find that very sensible. Because there has been a lot of talk, especially in fantasy circles, about authors being called out for things that they did that are problematic that they don't realize. And most of the times, the response is to be, instead of kind of figuring out, okay, yeah, actually, I shouldn't have done that, and now I will learn and know better, it's more like, oh, they are attacking me personally. And it's really nice to see that, yeah, you had a trouble with this story. And I mean, I think everybody has grown, you know, especially in the last, if 10 years ago, if I met who I was 10 years ago, I would definitely be embarrassed by myself and by my ignorance. So it's just, it's really refreshing to see you kind of coming back to the things that you have done in the past and don't align anymore with what you know and what you have learned, and change that. And of course, that the situation with your story as well, you can just remove it and then revise it and publish it again.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just, basically, ideally, like I don't want something I've written to then go and make someone feel like, oh God, that was like a, you know, like hitting me in the chest kind of thing.
Yep.
So like, obviously, so I, you know, if I can kind of avoid that or do better, I always want to. And I've always found like, actually, like people, like you said, a lot of people, there's been a lot of examples of people like getting really defensive. And I think just one of the things you need to kind of hold on to is, even, you know, if someone has picked up on something that like, oh, that was problematic, or that was an issue, it's not about you, it's not like a personal attack on you, it's about them saying like, this is a thing that, you know, you weren't aware of, or isn't necessarily like in your kind of field of experience, but it's in mine, and this is the impact it has. And, you know, I think that's just, that's a perfectly reasonable thing for someone to say. And, like, you know, it's important to listen to people.
Of course, and especially now, we have been hearing about sensitivity readers, I think that's how you say it, which in a few years you didn't really hear about.
Yeah, definitely. And I've actually, I've been working with some sensitivity readers for my middle grade book, and it's been such a great experience. It's been really, really helpful kind of getting those perspectives on, getting those perspectives on things I just, again, because it's not my experience, there are just some things that I wouldn't even have known that I didn't know. And it's just, I think of it as like, you know, for example, if I was writing about, say, I don't know, engineering or something, like, again, I'm not from a science background. If I was writing about engineering, I'd go to an engineer and ask them if, like, they could have a read and make sure it's, not made any huge mistakes. And I think it's a similar level of, you know, kind of accepting, like, you know, if you don't know something, it is okay, as long as the other person is okay with it, to ask and to find out and do your research. And I think it's the same kind of thing. And I think there's a lot of people who have kind of seem to have taken against it when it's to do with things like talking about people's identities, that, and they don't seem to realize it's like, well, you wouldn't say someone is censoring you if they said, like, you've written that account of open heart surgery completely wrong. You know, you wouldn't think that was censorship, you just think that was correct. And so why do you think it's a different issue when you're talking about, like, something else you have no experience of?
Yeah, of course, especially because if you are trying as much as possible to include diversity in your books, that means you are going to write about people who are not like you. Otherwise there's diversity, otherwise all characters are the same.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And, like, I would not want to write, like, a book that's entirely full of people just like me. And I think it's important, like, finding that balance of, like, I'm not, you know, not kind of putting yourself in the position of, like, I am writing for this group of people, because that's hugely problematic in and of itself. But you've got to kind of, like, try and include, you know, try, even if you're writing fantasy, try and represent the world you're in, because the world is diverse. And also then just be prepared to take on board that you're not going to get it right all the time, and it's not an attack on you if you don't, and people point that out.
It's an opportunity to learn, even.
Exactly.
I think it's very kind of people to actually, instead of just disregarding it, just actually take the time to tell you, hey, this is problematic because of this. We have
so
many ways now to improve ourselves, in a sense.
I think so. Yeah, it's just about kind of, it's about writing the best story you can. And I think, like, if you are, you know, you've got to kind of go into it thinking, like, I want to write the best story I can, and part of that is not replicating harmful stereotypes and not writing something that could potentially cause harm to other people.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about mental health. You mentioned that, actually, you mentioned that you knit as well, which is very interesting, because I embroider. I haven't been embroidering for a while, but I also had a conversation with Leah von Essen. She also writes her book Riot, and she was talking about mental health and embroidery. But how do you balance mental health with writing?
It's sort of an ongoing process for me, I'd say. So I'm really open about, like, my mental health. So I've, like, dealt with depression and anxiety, and I've also more recently been diagnosed with OCD as well. So it's like, none of them are so severe. Like, I don't deal with it to the severity that some other people have dealt with it. But I know for me, like, not writing is both a symptom of poor mental health for me and a cause of it. So again, when it becomes this sort of vicious circle, like, I know that I always feel better if I've done writing, but also it's like one of the first things that will kind of fall to the wayside if I'm in a bad kind of mental health space, for example. Like, if I can always tell, like, if I'm kind of going into a sort of a bit of a depression time, I write less and I find writing more difficult itself. And particularly, like, it's so weird. I find, like, I find it so much more difficult to write, like, action scenes if I'm in, like, a bad mental health space, or if I'm just tired, because I think it seems to take more energy to write something where there's a lot of action than, for example, to write, like, a very dialogue heavy but quite sedentary scene. So I think that's probably just my brain confusing fiction and reality. I was like, I'm not actually climbing a mountain and fighting a dragon. You don't need to get tired because I've written that kind of thing. But yeah, so basically balancing the mental health and the writing, I find like it's part of like, I suppose it's like that side of self-care that involves actually doing the jobs you need to do. Like not the, there's like the self-care where it's like, you know, take an evening off, have a bubble bath if that's what you like or something like that. And then there's part of self-care, which is like, okay, you need to do the laundry, do just like a little bit of laundry. And then, you know, that's one little bit done. There was like a podcast I listened to a while back, which it has an episode on something that the host called The Infinite 1%. And basically the premise of it is like the difference between 0% and 1% is huge, because if you keep doing 1% of something, eventually you will get to 100%. Whereas if you just keep doing 0%, it stays at 0%. So basically the way I kind of balance mental health and writing, like if I'm finding writing difficult because of various mental health issues, or if I'm just going through like a busy or a stressful time, I literally give myself like the absolute bare minimum bit of writing to do. Like I will kind of set a timer for 5 minutes and write for 5 minutes, and then if I've done that, that's something. And then if I end up doing more as a result, then that's great, but at least I will have done that 5 minutes. So that's kind of how I approach it. And I often find like I said, it's kind of I end up kind of getting this kind of quite big block about writing if I'm going through a time where like I'm, you know, dealing with poor mental health. But I always find that if I do just try and do a bit anyway, and then I can eventually build up, and then my mental health improves along with it, because it takes the focus off that like constant like inward focus on what, you know, whatever is bothering me, what I'm sad about, what I'm anxious about. And it puts the focus on something that I enjoy thinking about much more. So I think it kind of really helps in that regard. It's definitely a way to kind of focus on something else, and then just, yeah, I think then work through whatever the current issue is at that time.
What about knitting?
So knitting, I really like, I actually love the process of knitting most of all, really. I started doing it because like I bite my nails, I still do. It was trying to be a way to like stop myself biting my nails. It didn't kind of work for that, but I ended up just really enjoying knitting anyway. So I find it like a really fun thing to do, because it's something creative that like doesn't involve the wordy part of my brain. It's like it's sort of totally visual and I guess mechanical and stuff. So it kind of gives the writing part of my brain a rest, but it's still something creative to do. So I think that's one thing I really enjoy about it. I like knitting kind of, so there's so many really interesting patterns out there. I've kind of got to the point where lots of my friends are having babies, so I end up knitting like a lot of baby clothes for them, yeah, whether they want them or not, basically. Like if my friends have had kids, they will get a load of like baby cardigans and blankets, and they haven't asked for them, and I'm sure they're being very polite, but it's they get them. And so I also kind of like, you know, I do kind of charity knitting as well. So there's a couple of charities that, like, you know, they want squares for blankets, or again, they want like baby cardigans and baby clothes and things like that. So again, because I just enjoy the process of it, I'll kind of knit a load of things up and then send them off.
Do you listen to audiobooks when you knit, by the way?
I listen to usually podcasts.
I'm
a big supporter of audiobooks, but I kind of find that they don't work for me as well as like in so much as like, you know, reading, because like my husband, he listens to loads of audiobooks because he's got a very kind of audio brain. But I find like this is something I've kind of discussed with him quite a bit. I have a really, really visual brain. And so if I'm hearing like a story, I sometimes find it much more difficult to visualize it than I would if I was reading it. And podcasts seem a bit different because a lot of the ones I listen to are kind of conversation-based podcasts.
Yes.
You know, I'm not one of those people who's like snobby about audiobooks. I think they are great. It's just they don't quite work for me. I do more reading. I think I find if I'm listening to an audiobook, my brain kind of often gets distracted and things like that, whereas if I'm reading, it doesn't in such a way.
especially if you need to, if your brain kind of makes up an image in your mind, obviously you're going to need some focus. That audiobooks don't allow you that space. With audiobooks, you're constantly having to listen to what they are telling you and process it like very quick and then go on, because they don't stop. It's not like a book. Since you like knitting, I was kind of like, because a lot of people who like knitting or, you know, doing any handiwork usually take the time to listen or to watch something. And because I really like audiobooks, I always try to see, to kind of bring them into the conversation.
It's more podcasts with me when I'm knitting. Various different kinds of like podcasts that I listen to.
I would also like to know your story as a reader. When and how did you become a reader?
Again, that started really, really young for me. So like I was really, really lucky, and obviously it's a sign of kind of privilege that I've got like my close and extended family always read to me from a very young age, and I always had access to books, which I know is like, you know, not something that everyone has access to, so I was really fortunate in that. And I kind of just continued on from where I'd started off, like, you know, reading everything I could get my hands on and stuff. I was that kid who always used to kind of stay in at break time at school to do more reading, because like I found a book I loved and I didn't want to put it down.
And what were your favorite books growing up?
So growing up, I really, really loved the Narnia books. Like I went through a phase where I was just so, so like immersed in them. It was such a kind of huge part of my childhood. And like I mentioned, various myths as well. Like I had a whole load of books that were kind of, you know, mythology from various different kind of cultures and stuff. And especially I kind of really, really got interested in Norse mythology based on that.
And when did or how did comics start playing an important role in your life? Did you also used to read them as a child, or was it somewhat older?
A little older. So I started getting into comics when I was a teenager. So even though I do like superhero comics, I kind of started on non-superhero comics. So there was a series called Strangers in Paradise, which was one of the first ones I read. And it's sort of a contemporary real world kind of slice of life comics. But I really got into that. I then kind of, that sort of led me into things like Sandman and various like those, like the Vertigo comics. And I've also like, I've read like my share of Marvel and DC. I always find them kind of slightly more intimidating because there's so much of them. And like, you know, you feel like, oh, I'm going to pick up a comic and there's so many kind of threads of backstory that you need to know about for the comic to fully make sense. But so generally with like superhero comics, I've been reading kind of ones I found that have got sort of a set start point. So for example, I've really loved reading the Ms. Marvel comics. That's one of my favorite ones that I've read in recent years. And I also got into manga in my later teens as well. I still love Fruits Basket. I've got like the whole series of Fruits Basket on my shelves, and it's just such a lovely, fun story. I really, really enjoy reading it.
And how did you come across it? Was like something that you picked up from the library or at school, or how did you come across them?
So like in my local library growing up, actually there was like a really, really small comic section. So it was the library in my town, and it had like one of those revolving shelves with comics on. And so basically I just kind of read my way through those. There was like, you know, basically picking out any of the comics I could find there and kind of seeing what I liked, and then kind of, you know, if I found a comic I liked, I would then like try and track down all the other editions on it. So
yeah, but it's curious that you talked about the situation, because usually I read some graphic novels. I really like graphic novels, but they are less daunting because with graphic novels you know where to start, it's the book. But with comics, exactly, yeah. Yeah, you either go really back and then you try to find somehow like the number one, which is, you know, almost impossible. Or you kind of have to go into the story maybe knowing stuff from pop culture, which I guess like with, you know, Batman and stuff, maybe it's easier to find, or otherwise just a risk that you're like, oh, I have no idea what's in this number.
Exactly, yeah, it's tricky as well, because like I think I'm like, particularly when I come to like reading book series, I'm such a completionist. I love reading, like I want to read like the whole series, and you can't do that with like Superman, because that's 70 years of comics. There's just not enough time in like anyone's life to read all of Superman.
Now this is a more serious question. Did you or do you ever have to deal with sexism because you like and write about comics?
Actually, surprisingly little that I've encountered myself. I think it's partly because of the kind of comics I've read and the ones I write myself as well. So, for example, like I said, I got into comics through this series called Strangers in Paradise. And the community of readers of that, it was a very diverse community. It was very, like, there's the whole stereotype of some comics, yeah, and in some cases the stereotype is true, like there's some comics readerships that are very, very heavily weighted towards like the majority of readers are men, and there's a few women and a few non-binary people, but mostly men. I think with Strangers in Paradise, it was much more evenly weighted and it was much more kind of diverse from to begin with. So, and I think if you've got like a more even group to start off with, there's going to be less like sexism there from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also true of like the comics I write, and when I go to comic cons, we're in the indie comics area, and again it's a much more kind of like balanced, I suppose, like group of creators and stuff. It's not just white men, it's like, yeah, much more diverse, much more balanced. So there's less sexism that I think I've encountered because of like the areas of comics that I've engaged with. And I think also, like, particularly in the indie comics community that I'm part of as writing, we've got to know each other over the years. Like, I've got kind of lots of friends and acquaintances and people like I'm in touch with through that. It's also a case of we have each other's backs and stuff. So again, that's in a way, that's kind of, you know, if there is, for example, kind of someone who's coming up and being like creepy or aggressive, or for example, then you know you've got a group of people around you who have your back in that scenario and stuff. So, but like I said, it's not happened very often, I think, because the community itself is kind of has that balance to begin with.
You also go to comic conventions, you just said. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, so we've been going to comic conventions. Like, Emily and I go there to sell the comic. We usually have a table in most of the conventions we go to. The area is called the Comics Village, so it's kind of a place that's set aside for indie comics, as opposed to like the bigger dealership tables for things like Marvel and DC and things like that. And they're so much fun to go to. I really, really enjoy going to comic conventions. I've, like, because they haven't been on during the pandemic, I've missed them so much, because like they can be exhausting. It can be really, really tiring because it's such a full-on day. You're there first thing in the morning, you're kind of doing this very people-facing job, like, you know, chatting to people from behind your table for several hours, and like, it, you know, things kind of close, and then you're there afterwards kind of finishing up in the evening. But so that can be really tiring, but I get to see people that I only see at these comic conventions. You know, I can kind of hang out with my friends who, again, like, I only see these kind of few times a year. And yeah, I get to kind of top up my indie comics collection as well, which is always great fun. Like, I always end up spending way too much money at comic cons, but yeah, it's really great fun to go to. Mm-hmm.
And I know that I've never been to a comic con, but I know that a big part of it is cosplaying. Do you cosplay?
I don't generally. Like, before we started going as exhibitors, I did like one Owen High School Host Club cosplay, because that was an anime I really enjoyed watching at the time. So that shows kind of how long ago it is, because I completely like lost track. I haven't watched anime in years, but I do like, so I haven't done any cosplay for a really long time, but I do love seeing other people's cosplay. Like, it's always kind of quite fun guessing what the big cosplay is going to be each year. So, you know, for example, like during when Steven Universe was on, you would always kind of see people, like, an episode would come out a couple of weeks before Comic-Con with like a new character, for example. And you'd see, like, I'd be thinking like, okay, how long is it going to be before I see someone cosplaying that character at Comic-Con? And usually, you know, you can predict like the cosplays you're going to see. And then there's also ones that are kind of a total surprise, but really, really interesting to see as well. So,
is there one cosplay that you've seen at the convention that you kind of, you still think about it, that is like maybe the coolest cosplay you've ever seen?
Oh, there's quite a few. Usually, like, I love a family cosplay. Like, I love when you see like some parents and their kids who have just kind of turned up in, like, you know, all cosplaying different characters. So there was one where I think the parents were like they were all Transformers, and they've got their tiny little baby as Optimus Prime, and it was just, it was the cutest thing I've ever seen. It was amazing.
That sounds super cute. So
it was lovely, yeah. And there's just been loads of really, really clever cosplays I've seen over the years. I'm trying to think of something because, yeah, there's so many, like I said, like lots of Steven Universe cosplays. Yeah, trying to think of some others, but there's, yeah, like I said, there's always like such imagination that goes into them. It's really impressive to see people's cosplays.
If there were like no budget restrictions, what would I know that you don't do cosplay, but if you could, what would be like your dream cosplay?
Oh, it's yeah, no budget restrictions. I don't know what I would do. Like part of me thinks I'd like to do like a really kind of weird niche one, but like so for example, like this is kind of going off at a bit of a tangent, but when I was a kid, like one of the things that got me into fantasy was this TV program which was on like British television for quite a few years, and it was this show called Nightmare, and I don't know like how widely it's known outside the UK, but it was
I'm not very big on British shows. I will ask my boyfriend. My boyfriend has been introducing me to some UK shows that he used to watch with his family. Yeah. So
yeah. So this was like this sort of kids game show basically, but it would be this team of children. One of them would go, you know, would have this kind of helmet that completely covered their head so they couldn't see anything. And they would go into like what was obviously just a room for the green screens. But there would be this like fantasy dungeon projected onto it, and they would have to go through and complete all these tasks. And they had like the three other members of their team who would direct them around and tell them what to do. So I think that would be the kind of cosplay I'd do, because I think like we've only done Comic Cons in the UK, and I think like people of kind of my age group would get it immediately, and everyone else would be really confused by it. So that would be that would amuse me, I think, that's like doing a cosplay just as this person with like a helmet covering my entire head being directed around by my three friends.
They'll gather some fun reactions.
Definitely.
And what is your favorite thing about comic conventions?
Definitely the people. So like I said, I go there with Emily, my best friend, who I do the comic with, and it's great to kind of spend that length of time with her, hang out with her, and also see our other friends as well. Like, see, yeah, we've made some really, really good friends through the comic scene. It's good to kind of hang out with them and see them. And like also, like I said, I love buying indie comics there because it's things you can't get anywhere else, really. Like I said, I love kind of mainstream, traditionally published comics as well. But, you know, for example, like there's so many comic books you can't get except at the comic convention. So it's great to kind of pick those up there, see kind of the new things that people have come up with. And also, I really love going to panels as well. Like that's something that I've been trying to go to more in recent years. You'll get some really, really interesting panels on like, you know, various different things about comics, or at some of the bigger comic conventions, there's other things as well. So like there's like films or TV shows, or just things to do with like general geeky interested subjects and that kind of thing. So it's always good to kind of go and hear people's perspectives on things.
Are there any tips to prepare for an event like that? How do you prepare for it?
Like, this is something I've been doing kind of as an exhibitor. I think I would not do it quite necessarily if I was going there as a guest, but it's definitely an option. I usually kind of book a day off work afterwards because, like I said, it's so much fun, but it can be really, really exhausting. Especially, like, I'm quite introverted, so even though I like love talking to like my friends and talking to people who are coming to read the comics and stuff, it definitely takes a lot out of me. So I kind of like having a day afterwards just kind of sit at home and read the stuff I bought and, you know, have a duvet day, really. Another thing I would say, like really pragmatically, take your own food and drink, because otherwise you can end up spending like all your money on food and drink at a comic convention. And I would say, like I said, like people's cosplay is amazing. I would definitely recommend, like, always ask someone's permission if you want to take a photo of them, because usually they will be absolutely fine, but it's just kind of common courtesy, you know, if you want to have a photo with somebody or like take their photo because you love their cosplay, just ask them, like, you know, make sure they're okay with it and that kind of thing. That's my biggest advice, I would say. And, you know, just, yeah, pace yourself, look around, you know, give yourself time to explore all the different areas of the convention, because there's usually so much going on. It's easy to miss things. So yeah, yeah, maybe kind of plan your way around the convention hall, mm-hmm. kind of work out where you want to go to first.
Great. You also like to play Dungeons. I'm pronouncing this right. Dungeons and Dragons in your free time. What's your favorite thing about the game? Yeah, and you can go wild about it, because I honestly have an idea of what it is, but just very vague.
I've been playing Dungeons and Dragons, I think, since about 2017, because I mentioned, like, I love podcasts. One of the podcasts that I really, really love is The Adventure Zone. And that got me into, like, the idea of, you know, I listened to this, you know, Dungeons and Dragons podcast, which had such an amazing story and amazing characters and stuff. And it kind of, it made me want to go and play Dungeons and Dragons myself. So I kind of, you know, like, chatted to some friends, and we ended up starting a game, which we've been playing ever since, really. What I really love is, like, the creativity it kind of opens up for you. You have the opportunity to play a character, and there's, you know, there's kind of no limits, really, on how you can create your character. Like, I'm currently playing, like, I started off playing, like, a dwarven bard who was a hipster, who just was, like, wandering around looking for inspiration for her next album, and just being kind of, you know, adorably chaotic mess, basically. And one of my current characters I'm playing is, there's a species in Dungeons and Dragons called Arakocra, who are kind of bird people. And usually they kind of look like eagles. And I decided I wanted him to look like a duck, because that was just the idea I had of him. So he's like this duck man who goes around selling fake medicine to people, because I just kind of had this idea of this guy who is like a terrible charlatan, but really, really fun to play. So basically he kind of goes around in dungeons, but we've got this whole kind of chaos group of adventurers who we're kind of, you know, are kind of quite, yeah, like I said, absolutely chaotic. And my character in particular, he just like, you know, he kind of wants to sell he's an old fashioned pattern medicine salesman, basically. So I guess that's like the medical history coming in again. He just kind of sells like colored water to people and tells them it's healing potions and stuff. So again, you can kind of come up with that as like, you know, just like a completely off the wall idea and build that into your character. And then you get like your friends who you're playing with kind of, you know, you bounce those ideas and that creativity off each other, and you can come up with just such fun interactive stories together. And I think another important thing is, like, obviously we started playing in 2017, and it's been like a kind of a big part of, you know, my social life, because we're all like, you know, it's the whole thing, you know, everyone's either moved away from each other or you're busy with work and things like that. So it's really good to have kind of a regular meetup to catch up with your friends and kind of do a fun activity. And particularly during the pandemic, it's been absolutely just a lifeline, really, because, you know, during like the first lockdown in particular, everyone was just, you were in your homes all the time. You weren't allowed to go and meet up with people in person. And just having like a regular session where you could do something, and yeah, you could kind of, yeah, we've always played it online, because like, even though most of us live relatively close to each other, we've got some friends who live in like, you know, other ends of the country. It's just been really, really good to kind of have a regular kind of online meetup and chat with your friends and do something just really silly and fun together. And so yeah, it's been absolutely great for that.
I find that a lot of people who play Dungeons and Dragons also have a big love for stories. Do you think there is like that connection between Dungeons and Dragons and storytelling?
Definitely, yeah, I think so. I think like, I don't know too much about the earlier editions of Dungeons and Dragons, but from what I've picked up, like the fifth edition, like the latest kind of incarnation of it, has been more focused on like the storytelling and the role-playing aspect of it, rather than kind of like the stats and the kind of the dice rolls and the maths, that kind of thing. Like, I'm going to have loads of people yelling at me for that, because I don't know, like, is it, people are going to say, no, that's actually not the history of it at all. But that's my understanding of it. But basically, yeah, I think it's, I kind of also see it as, it's a really good kind of, I suppose it's like, you know, kind of workout for your kind of writing brain in a way. That's what I found it as. Yeah, you can kind of create a character and explore kind of how they fit in different situations and stuff. I've actually found that kind of useful as a way of like doing something creative and sort of writing related without it being kind of you know, sit down formal writing kind of thing. So yeah, it's definitely good for kind of building your character creation, thinking about how kind of different scenarios and plot points might work.
Maybe I should check it out, because is that podcast that you listen to, does it last like about 4 hours each time? Is that the one on YouTube?
That one's Critical Role, which I did start listening to. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed it, but I haven't been able to kind of finish the first series because, yeah, like a 4-hour episode, even though I love podcasts, a 4-hour episode is too much for me.
The
one I listened to that really, really got me into it is called The Adventure Zone, and it's by the McElroys, who they have a lot of other podcasts as well, but this one's really, really worth a listen. Like, I made my husband listen to it during the first lockdown. He's not really a fantasy fan at all, but he absolutely loved it as well. So I think it's one of those ones that's kind of, it's got something for everyone.
Yeah, my question was because, again, like I said, my boyfriend is, he doesn't really play Dungeons and Dragons, but he listens to that podcast. And I find it amazing that you would listen to a podcast for 4 hours about like people playing the game. So that's very funny to me. But I guess, yeah, it also has storytelling and funny situations.
I think so. And I think that's like, I know like Critical Role can be, is such a huge, huge thing. Actually, at one of the Comic Cons I went to, I think it must be a couple of years ago now. It feels like 2020 is just kind of, you know, like, if I say a year ago, I usually mean 2019. But like, I remember there was one Comic Con we went to, and like, a lot of the Critical Role cast were there to do a panel and to do signings. And I'm not going to lie, like, it's a huge comic convention anyway. It's MCM London, which is held in the Excel Centre in London, and it's enormous. It might be the biggest UK Comic Con. And I think probably about 25% of people who were there to see the Critical Role cast. And it's just, you know, a few years ago, that never would have, like, people going to see a Dungeons and Dragons podcast wouldn't, it would have been such a small audience, but it's become such a huge thing.
That's super cool. Where can people find you online?
So the comics that I do with Emily Brady, they can all be found at www.footloosecomic.com. So we've got our three comics there. There's also a Twitter account for the comic, which is @footloose_comic. And for my solo writing, I have a link tree, which is Alice Nuttall Books, all one word. Nuttall is spelt with 2 T's and 2 L's, but if you Google me, you'll find it. We also have a Patreon for the comics where, like, I do a lot of extra writing, and you can see Emily's artwork and like the sort of progress of the comic pages as they go up as well.
Now, this is always the last question of the podcast. An all-time favorite book and a book you would recommend right now.
Oh, it's so hard to choose an all-time favorite book. One that's been like really kind of significant to me, I guess, Tamara Pierce's Song of the Lioness series and Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials series. I think they had a huge influence on me when I was little. Also, just anything by Terry Pratchett, but particularly Night Watch, I think. I got reminded of that recently because there was a lot of mention of it on like some of the Facebook groups I'm in. But I think Night Watch is probably kind of up there as one of my favorite books. It's really, really hard to choose a favorite because, like I said, I read really widely, and there's so many different books that have had like a really huge impact on me. Books I'd recommend recently, like I said, I read like a lot of fantasy, particularly like middle grade fantasy. One of the, like, there's two books in the series so far. It's called The Strange Worlds Travel Agency by an author called L.D. Lipinski, and it's sort of this portal fantasy of this girl who finds a travel agency that lets you travel to different worlds and, you know, through suitcases. And it's just absolutely amazing setup for a story. And I really love the characters. I recently read The City We Became by N.K. Jemisin. And, I know, like, this is not a hot take at all because it was so well received. But it's one of the best books I've ever read. It was so amazing. Really, really enjoyed it. And one of the ones I'm looking forward to recently, I'm looking forward to Witchlings by Clarabelle A. Ortega, because I loved her book Ghost Squad. And this one looks even more exciting because I love it. Like I said, I love kids with magical powers. And this is what, that's what that book looks like. So I think it's going to be an amazing read.
Do you know when it comes out?
I'm not sure when it, exactly when it comes out. I'm sure it's like in the next couple of months, because I know she's been kind of doing a lot of, like, you know, the pub has been released. She's been mentioning a lot, Clarabelle Ortega has been mentioning a lot on her Twitter feed. So yeah, I'm not sure of the release date. I should have looked that up, but yeah, I can't wait for when it does come out.
It's something for us to look forward to. Alice, thank you so much for coming to the podcast. It was super fun to talk with you.
Great to talk to you too. Thank you so much. It's been really fun.
You can access today's show's notes via my pod page, which you can find along with all of my social media links at linktree.com/Karina Pereira. In there, you'll also find a link to a Story of Sorts playlist available on Libre.fm containing the audiobooks recommended by our guests, which will be updated as the show progresses. If you'd like to give Libre.fm a try, you can use the code STORYOFSORTS at checkout to get two books for the price of one. This offer is valid for new Libre.fm members in the US and Canada. Libre.fm is an audiobook platform which allows you to buy audiobooks directly from an indie bookstore. Check them out. If you have enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting A Story of Sorts on Patreon. Patreon is a platform which allows you to contribute monthly to the podcast in exchange for extra content, such as early access to episodes, a shout-out at the end of an episode and on Instagram, and choosing a theme for me to talk about on the podcast. You can become a patron at patreon.com/astoryofsorts. I'd also be very grateful if you would simply leave a review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. As usual, I'll be back in 2 weeks with a new interview. I'll talk to you then, and thank you for listening.